What is important is to find a loving home for children who need homes.
The cultural festival is just huge. Things like close to 600 voices from around the world. The Poetry Grand Slam called Poetic Justice. Lots of dance parties, a fantastic opening ceremony.
We didn't go into it saying, okay, we are the first gay couple being portrayed.
People don't realize on Survivor, there are actually 7 gays through the 4 seasons. Only 3 of us are out.
I'm Danny Jimenez.
And I'm Oswald Mendez. You know us from The Amazing Race.
I think that's part of what's happening all over TV is the obligatory gay character.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. South Africa's highest court upholds adoption equality, a cornucopia of cultural festivities complement the gay games in Sydney, and do TV's ubiquitous reality queers signal progress? Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 14, 2002. South Africa is the first nation in Africa to grant adoption rights to gay and lesbian couples, following a ruling this week by the country's highest court. The Constitutional Court struck down laws prohibiting those adoptions as violating the equality rights of gays and lesbians. South Africa's 1996 constitution was the first in the world to explicitly prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation. The Constitutional Court also found that those laws failed to give top priority to the best interests of the children. Its decision said, "Family life contemplated in the Constitution can be lived in different ways. Stability, support, and affection can be provided by people in permanent same-sex relationships." The ruling gave final confirmation to a September decision by the Pretoria High Court. The challenge to South Africa's Child Care Act and Guardianship Act was brought by Anne-Marie DeVoe and Suzanne Dutoit, two judges who've been a couple for 13 years. Their aim was for Dutoit to be able to co-adopt DeVoe's two children. As DeVoe said, "I needed to know that if something happened to me, Suzanne would be able to take care of the children." Dutoit told BBC Network Africa of the ruling.
"You know, if you look at it from the child's perspective, then what is important is to find a loving home for children who need homes. I think that makes the issue about whether it's a homosexual couple or a heterosexual couple rather less important."
Their legal victory also opens the door for other gay and lesbian couples to adopt unrelated children together. Dutoit believes those adoptions have become more acceptable to South Africans because of the increasing number of children orphaned by AIDS. She called legal unions for gays and lesbians the next step.
Canada continues to wrestle with equal marriage rights for same-gender couples. The federal government has announced that it will appeal last week's Quebec Superior Court ruling that restricting marriage to heterosexual couples is illegal discrimination under Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms. A similar ruling by an Ontario Superior Court in July is already being appealed by the federal government. A Justice Ministry appeal is also pending on a British Columbia decision last year which found the marriage law to be discriminatory but justified. Like the judges themselves, Justice Minister Martin Cochon said the issue should not be decided solely by the courts and that the government must show leadership. He's developing a discussion paper and hopes that a parliamentary committee will present recommendations to the House of Commons before the end of the year.
But the Montreal Presbytery of the United Church of Canada voted this week to hold religious ceremonies for gay and lesbian couples contracting Quebec's new civil unions. Those first-in-the-nation civil unions grant unmarried couples, including same-gender couples, all the provincial-level benefits of marriage, which in Canada is partly controlled by federal laws. A spokesperson for the 15,000-member presbytery said, "We're the first major denomination that's saying yes to the government. We wanted to put out the message to gay and lesbian couples that we're there for them." The resolution, passed by an overwhelming majority, calls it proper for the presbytery's congregations and ministers to give Christian recognition to civil unions on the same basis as marriages. The presbytery welcomes the opportunity to celebrate with all couples their marriages and unions in a Christian context. It also strongly recommends pre-union counseling for couples and allows any ministers not wishing to perform union ceremonies to opt out.
In the U.S., the anti-gay religious right appears to have failed where its political activism first manifested, in Dade County, Florida. Back in 1977, singer Anita Bryant led a successful campaign for a referendum that repealed a county ordinance prohibiting sexual orientation discrimination. That campaign had a lasting national impact, mobilizing both supporters and opponents of gay and lesbian civil rights to a new level of political struggle. It wasn't until 1998 that the Miami-Dade County Commission reenacted protections from sexual orientation discrimination. This year, the Christian Coalition-affiliated group, Take Back Dade, was able to mount a repeal initiative in a second attempt that featured several arrests amidst allegations of fraud in its signature-gathering process. This week, voters apparently upheld civil rights and rejected repeal by a margin of about 6% in unofficial results.
But the issue is far from decided. Despite, and in many cases because of, the reputedly error-proof computerized voting system installed after the 2000 presidential vote debacle, there were numerous irregularities at the polls. Many polling places opened so late that the president's brother, Governor Jeb Bush, extended the voting day. Some voters were unable to vote on initiatives at all. Others said their votes against repeal registered in favor of it. Take Back Dade will challenge the outcome and has also vowed to put repeal before the voters again until it succeeds. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force mounted a major campaign against repeal in concert with the local group that spurred the passage of the civil rights ordinance, Save Dade. Armed with a new $1 million grant from the Arcus Foundation for organizing and training, NGLTF could be fighting as many as 5 anti-gay ballot initiatives in November. Gay and lesbian civil rights repeal measures will definitely appear on ballots in Tacoma, Washington and Ypsilanti, Michigan, and the Christian Coalition of Maine appears to have submitted enough signatures to win a vote on repeal of a new Westbrook ordinance.
But there's new hope for civil rights in Pennsylvania, as the small town called New Hope became the state's first borough to prohibit sexual orientation discrimination, with a unanimous vote of the town council this week. Not only was there no opposition on the council, there was no opposition from the public in posh Bucks County, with all in attendance celebrating the new ordinance. The measure protects gays and lesbians from discrimination in housing, employment, and public accommodations. Similar ordinances are in place in Pennsylvania, in 6 much larger cities and 1 county.
However, in Topeka, Kansas, home base of peripatetic anti-gay crusader Fred Phelps and his Westboro Baptist Church, the city council this week rejected by a 5-4 vote the addition of lesbian, gays, and transgenders to local anti-discrimination ordinances. The Topeka Council also passed a hate crimes measure only after deleting sexual orientation and gender identity or expression from among 11 protected categories. Only 1 council member opposed that amendment. The council was heavily lobbied, mostly against the measures, and the issues are expected to be significant in Topeka local elections in April.
In a number of primary elections in the U.S. this week, openly gay and lesbian candidates prevailed. The Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund claimed 10 victories for its 15 endorsed candidates, with 1 outcome still undetermined.
One of the biggest wins was Rhode Island State Representative David Cicilline's, as he became the Democratic candidate for mayor of Providence and will almost certainly go on to make heavily Democratic Providence the largest city in the U.S. with an openly gay or lesbian mayor.
The best-known loser was Ed Flanagan, who was the first open gay in the U.S. to hold an elected statewide office. But he stepped down as Vermont's state auditor to make a failed U.S. Senate bid, and now he's lost the Democratic primary for Vermont's state treasurer.
One of the higher-profile winners was Danny O'Donnell, winner of a Democratic candidacy to represent a heavily Democratic New York State Assembly district. Open gay O'Donnell just happens to be the brother of now openly lesbian megastar Rosie O'Donnell.
A heavily Democratic Arizona State House district could make Democratic candidate and Navajo Nation member Jack Jackson Jr., the first openly gay Native American in the U.S. ever to win elected office.
In Maryland, Democratic incumbent Maggie McIntosh will return to the state house, where she's the majority leader, while Democrat Rich Madaleno is expected to join her as that body's first openly gay man.
A heavily Democratic Wisconsin state Senate district is likely to make Democratic candidate Tim Carpenter the first open gay ever to serve there.
And finally, neither the first nor the last TV entertainment to seek a ratings boost with a gay wedding, but a rather surprising one, is World Wrestling Entertainment's SmackDown. In promoting this week's on-screen commitment ceremony between tag team Billy and Chuck, also known as Monty Sopp and Chuck Palumbo, WWE made it more than clear that the men are non-gays acting out a storyline. It opened with Chuck proposing on bended knee with a diamond ring and Billy tearfully accepting. The wedding scene was lavish, but to the crowd's chants of "just say no," both men had second thoughts in the course of their vows. Then the Justice of the Peace revealed himself to be Eric Bischoff, and the whole wedding revealed to have been a plot, with Chuck and Billy's hairstylist Rico as a co-conspirator. Naturally, this ended with all the crowd ever wanted, a mass brawl among a whole slew of WWE regulars, but not before Billy and Chuck had declared themselves to be heterosexual. If there's a plus side, it's that many have seen WWE fandom as very much more tolerant of Billy and Chuck's ongoing flirtation than any past evidence of gayness among wrestlers.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 14th, 2002, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
Ever since Lance said it loud on the groundbreaking PBS Cinema Verite series An American Family nearly 20 years ago, lesbians and gay men have been flourishing primetime participants in what is now a booming reality television craze. But is this heightened visibility important or merely entertainment? Our prolific Steve Pride explores that question later in the program. Along with the wide array of sporting events it's probably best known for, the 2002 International Gay Games in Sydney, Australia, will offer a veritable cultural feast as well. The artistic component of the athletic gathering will involve over 2,500 participants at 65 venues around the city in late October and early November. Kicked off by opening ceremonies featuring Canadian superstar K.D. Lang, the Gay Games Cultural Festival includes performances ranging from a Bangladeshi dance troupe to events headlined by TV's former Golden Girl, Bea Arthur, and a 22-year-old female stand-up comedian from Namibia, with lots of art, music, shows, and dance parties in between. This Way Out correspondent Uma Kali Shakti gets a preview from Games production manager Teresa Famularo.
The cultural festival is just huge. We're looking around at around 90-odd events that go from things
and queer.
Like... Absolutely queer. That go from things like Lindy at Sydney Opera House, which is the launch of the opera, right through to a new ballet group down at Bondi called Bondi Rocks, down at Bondi Pavilion, through to Newtown New Works, which is a participatory event, which is a culmination of people who've... paid their registration, much like they would for sport, but instead of participating in a sport, they're actually going to participate with bringing their new theatre pieces to our two theatres in Newtown, both Newtown Theatre and New Theatre.
There's like the Poetry Grand Slam.
Yeah, there is a Poetry Grand Slam. It's called Poetic Justice, which is a pretty cool name. It's something that is probably a lot more underground, I think, in Australia than what it is, especially in the States. In the States, it's a really huge thing. But people have a minute to get up and do their poetry, and it's just this whole match element to it.
Exciting.
And it winds up in a big final on
and
the
last night. And
there's
another cultural competition, like Draw Your Games.
Yeah, Draw Inspiration, Sketch Your Gay Games. That's another one that people can register for. That's a great event. I mean, it's one of the few in the cultural festival that actually offers people the chance of gold, silver and bronze, which is really cool.
And there's parties?
Lots of dance parties, a fantastic opening ceremony.
What do you think you're particularly looking forward to yourself in terms of the cultural events?
having done big events before, the part that I really look forward to is when we kick off on the 25th of October and the energy that's going to be in the air, because it's just going to be electric. It's one of those fantastic things where when people are in that space, it's absolutely and utterly... Well, you can't even express it in words, you know. We've talked about
visual events. There's going to be art events.
Yeah, one of the art projects, which is going to be a lot of fun, and we're actually putting a call out there to the general populace at the moment. Any queer artists out there who want to jump on board, we've got a fantastic project called Queering the Streets. And what we're trying to do is engage people in the general public as they walk past shop fronts and sort of places around the Sydney CBD area, around King Street, Newtown, around Oxford Street, where we're giving the artists a chance to, well, we'll marry them up with certain shop fronts, etc., and it gives them a chance to actually put their artworks into shop front windows, which will be a really exciting project, and just put it out there for the general people and really sort of encapture, I suppose, the three values of the Gay Games being participation, personal best and inclusion. So,
what about music?
Wow, we've got 500 plus, I think we're getting close to 600 voices from around the world who are going to be singing, doing smaller concerts around the city and at Olympic Park, which is another one of our venues. But all together they'll come and join forces at the Sydney Opera House for the Sing Out, which is on November the 7th. So that's another one that you can currently, at the moment, buy your tickets online for, because it has been released. It'll be just amazing to hear 600 voices in the concert hall of the Opera House. That's just going to be truly amazing.
Are there other kinds of musical events?
We've got marching bands. We've got Open Stage, which is another participatory event. And Open Stage will be appearing at both Olympic Park and North Hyde Park. Both North Hyde Park and Olympic Park are our hubs.
Fox Studio?
Fox Studios as well, but the Open Stage is actually at Olympic Park and at North Hyde Park.
Explain the hub, because I know for people who, for example, went to Amsterdam, there was the village where you hung around.
Yeah, they had Friendship Village back in Amsterdam.
So what are we doing in Sydney?
Well, this is kind of, I suppose, a little bit along the same kind of lines. The hub was a title that stuck. It'll give people the chance to sort of get together, a meeting point, a meeting place, people to meet people. There'll be food available there. There'll be a stage there, which will have, you know, fantastic artists from across, you know, once again, from across the breadth of the cultural elements. I suppose it's almost quite a chill out space. What better place than right in the middle of the city?
You've come all the way across the world and your ticket, you're not quite ready to go to something, it hasn't started. You can hang around the hub and meet with people, cruise. I'll be doing a lot of cruising myself.
That was Teresa Famularo, Sydney Gay Games production manager, talking with Uma Kali Shakti about the cultural festival, which will be held in conjunction with the Gay Games. For more information online, go to www.sydney2002.org.au.
Hello, this is Bruce Valanche, you know, the big blonde Muppet on the Hollywood Squares, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. Please do stay tuned.
This is real life. This is real love. This is real pain. That much I'm sure of. These are real tears. These are real fears inside that I can't hide.
Many people consider the new queer visibility on reality television shows a sign of social acceptance, while others complain that lesbians and gays are just the chic flavor of the month to networks that will do anything for a ratings point. Either way, these shows do demonstrate for viewers that old adage, we are everywhere. This Way Out's Steve Pride consults a well-known sociologist about the phenomenon and talks with some of the gay men who've been keeping it real.
Nearly 20 years ago, Lance Loud stunned America when he came out in the PBS documentary, An American Family. Today, reality-based programming is everywhere, and it's almost news if there isn't a gay or lesbian in the mix. MTV led this new wave when it premiered The Real World in 1992 with Outkast member Norm Corpy, and kicked it into high gear 2 years later when it introduced the world to Pedro Zamora, a gay activist with AIDS, who became a role model for millions.
I'm Judd Winnick from Real World San Francisco. We began filming the show on February 12th, 1994, my 24th birthday, and finished filming in mid-June. That was the entire 6 months. Mid-August, Pedro checked into a hospital and basically never recovered. There was a downhill slide from there with some peaks and valleys in there, but by November, he was gone. Pedro never got the opportunity to see even all the show, all the episodes. I think he saw about half the season. I don't think he ever knew the full effect of what he had accomplished and how much he'd reached people.
In the summer of 2000, the reality genre took a giant step toward the mainstream with a huge success of the first season of Survivor. The victory of openly gay Richard Hatch was a triumph for visibility, but Hatch was not everyone's ideal of a gay role model. But perhaps that's no longer the point.
Hi, I'm Danny Jimenez.
And I'm Oswald Mendez. You know us from The Amazing Race, from screaming like two maniacs while we bungee jumped in New Zealand and running around the world.
We totally were ourselves.
Yeah, we didn't go there with a hidden agenda of like, you know, let's speak up for the gay community. I wouldn't dare be a role model for the gay community because, you know, you have so many ranges of people, just like you do, you know, in the heterosexual community. So no one really can claim to be a role model. You can just be the best person you can be.
Exactly.
And if someone takes away from the fact that, you know, you're gay or straight or whatever, you know, a good quality and apply it to their lives, that's all you can hope.
Right.
Which is good. I mean, it's showing the world that we're not all the same,
right.
And that there are varieties.
There's diversity within, there's diversity. The gay man or the lesbian woman.
I mean, it's funny because it's. I think a lot of times gays have been portrayed as manipulative and backstabbing in some reality TV shows, with the exception of some of the cable shows where they can be more lighthearted. Network television traditionally had been portraying, you know, look at Richard Hatch and, you know, we love the Guidos, but look at the way they were portrayed,
right.
You know.
And they're actually great guys.
And they're great guys. But, you know, I think they allowed us to be a little bit more fun-loving and a little bit more carefree and... That was a step in the right direction, you know, not be so in your face and be just ourselves.
Hi, my name's John Carroll. I was the evil gay nurse from Omaha that was on Survivor Marquesas. I almost made it to Africa, and then I think they chose Brandon instead of me. I think they made a decision which gay boy did they want, you know, the queen or the dude from the Midwest.
Part of the game for the audience is figuring out which one is or isn't, because it seems like it's not one in 10, but one per show.
It was really funny, too, because they were trying to decide between Gabriel and I. But if you really looked at our profiles, other than my AIDS work that I did for 8 years, Gabriel's was like ballroom dancer, figure skater. I mean, so everyone thought he was going to be the one. And then they thought, well, maybe what they're going to do is put two of them together and see if we get a little, little love thing going on. And I did have a huge crush on him. So I had to get rid of him because he was just too damn cute to keep around. It was very distracting.
Not every gay or lesbian is ready to be out to the entire country.
I was a victim of a hate crime right before I left for the final interviews. And... So when I came back, you know, I thought, wow, you know, I'm really at risk here in this state because, I mean, I'm not just coming out to friends and family. I'm coming out to my inner circle, my community, my state, and, you know, eventually, you know, obviously the whole United States. You really have to be aware of what you're walking into and the known and the unknown. But you know what? If we don't come out, we're never going to have full equality under the law. We're never going to have the right to adopt. We're never going to have the right to have civil unions. None of those things are going to happen if we're invisible. And they even talked about in my interviews. It was a form of activism for me. It was just taking it to the next level, saying, you know what? I'm here. I'm queer. And deal with it. So I think everybody needs to do that. And what's amazing is people don't realize on Survivor, there are actually 7 gays through the 4 seasons. Only 3 of us are out. There are 4 others who are in the closet. And you all can do the math.
How real are these reality shows? Participants on every program sign releases giving the producers the right to portray them any way they wish. As Oswald and Danny mentioned, Team Guido from the first season of The Amazing Race were the victims not of prejudice, but editing. The couple began the show as role models of gay fidelity, but soon became the villains everyone loved to hate.
Hi, I'm Joe Baldassare.
And hi, I'm Bill Bartek.
Team Guido. People out there have to remember that in 13 episodes of The Amazing Race, you'll see somewhere between 9 and 10 hours of show. And they had over 900 hours of videotape on all the contestants. So you're really seeing 1% of all the footage that they took of us. And in 1%, they can make anybody look like anything, including the lovable grandmother could have been looking like a bitch.
Yeah,
because we all have our down times and our nasty days, and we say our catty comments, and everybody's competitive.
But we didn't go into it saying, okay, we are the first gay couple being portrayed. We thought about it, but it wasn't like we made a conscious effort to put out this kind of a certain type of gay couple or something. The only thing that we did is, personally, our relationship was sacred. We weren't going to air our dirty laundry, so to speak, on national television. So we did come up with a escape route. If we got into an argument or something or felt like it was coming on, we'd say enough said if we were so stressed out, which was quite a few times during the race. But, you know, beyond that, we didn't really make any plans for how we were portrayed. I mean, we didn't really have any choice. The quote that we have is, the camera's not lying, but editing can tell whatever story it wants to.
I mean,
to,
did we do these things? Obviously,
of course we
did some of them in the way they were portrayed.
And we had fun while we were doing it.
But a lot of things didn't even happen that way.
Regardless of editing and plot dynamics, what is the potential social impact of gay people being on major network shows?
I'm Susanna Walters. I'm the director of women's studies at Georgetown University, where I also teach in the sociology department. I think that's part of what's happening all over TV, is the obligatory gay character. The danger with some of the new visibility is the belief that real, potent, ugly, long-lasting homophobia isn't still around. So that there can be the delusion for young people. Say, well, look, there's the real world. There's Will and Grace. There's this. You know, I'm just going to go ahead and come out. You know, I'm just going to go do what I want to do, which they should do. But I think there might not be the awareness that visibility is not necessarily the sure sign of substantive, long-lasting social change. It's a part of it and a necessary part of it, but it's not the same, and it's not all of a piece with other kinds of social change.
But since reality shows purport to depict reality, the inclusion of a gay man or lesbian also sends the message that such people are just like everyone else. Not necessarily villainous or saintly, just another flavor in the melting pot. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening. Wow.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Uma Kali Shakti, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Michael Schembri. Katie Lang and Bon Jovi performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Arcus Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks very much for listening on KUMD Duluth, Minnesota, WSUI Iowa City, Iowa, CJSF Burnaby, British Columbia, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.